Welcome to A Closer Look, a special KSKA presentation. For KSKA, I'm Len Anderson. A Closer Look allows us to offer our listeners a chance to learn more about a recent news story or to hear from people doing special, if sometimes mostly unrecognized, work in our community. On today's Closer Look, we present Anchorage School Board member Macon Roberts. Roberts' 1940s boyhood in the Mississippi Delta cotton fields instilled a lifelong belief in the power of education to change lives. That belief was a primary factor in his decision to become a youth counselor and probation officer, and later in life to seek a seat on the Anchorage School Board. His life itself is something of an example of how far we've come as a nation, but also perhaps of the distance we have yet to go. Roberts served 2 3-year terms on the school board and retired last month. We begin this edition of Closer Look with his farewell to his colleagues on the Anchorage School Board. The audio was provided by the school district's television station, Channel 14.
Well, first of all, let me just say that I am very honored to have served the community the last 6 years. And I'll start out by thanking the voters and the public who supported me, thanking my fellow school board members with whom I've had the pleasure of working with. I guess the way I would like you to remember me is not so much of what I've done, and I've been really privileged and honored to be voted in the 3 positions by my fellow board members, clerk, treasurer, and currently the vice president. But I think it's important to know a little bit about how I got here, and I'll keep my story short, but I'm going to tell my story so that hopefully my story can be an inspiration to the students by a teacher or to a student from the parents. The possibility of me being where I am and where I've made it, if you knew where I started, is probably was as much odds as a person winning the lottery. And for example, I think it's important that students know and people can use an example of somebody like me who started in the Mississippi Delta in the 40s. In a big family of 11, middle child, in a time where my parents were never able to vote because of their color, and that we were sharecroppers, and school was secondary to the crops being brought in, although the parents really would have liked for us to have gone to school. So it was very difficult for me to be in the field and see the bus pass and see my fellow students laughing while passing the cornfield. I guess it motivated me to do as much as I could and study as hard as I could when I did get a chance to go to school, which was either when the crops were finished or rain came or inclement weather forced us inside at school. So from the time of 6 years old when we started the school until, you know, all during those years I was able to work and help bring the crop in, the only time I can recall that I was able to go to school every day was when I was in the 10th grade, 18 years old, and I started driving a school bus. And big $45 a month, but that's all right for driving the bus. But it enabled me to go to school. They had student bus drivers, and I was one of several. And I guess what that did for me was it taught me, first of all, responsibility. And I was very honored to do that. And bus drivers had the status of star athletes. But the thing is that growing up at a time in which I did, and not being able to have first class books and desks. And at that time and place, we, the students, the black students, got the hand-me-down from the white students. And the white students knew where their old books were going and their old desks was gone, were going. So they didn't write things like, I hope this book served you as well as it did me. And I wish you much luck. Quite the opposite. Well, anyway, excelled very well in the last two grades of school, and I just had a hunger for education and a hunger for helping people. And when I graduated, I moved out west and started college, studying sociology so I could help kids my age. And I majored in, switched my major to psych. I had two majors, one sociology and one psychology. And I worked in the field of as a counselor down the street at McLaughlin for several years, and as a probation officer downtown for 15 years. And I felt that I touched a lot of people because I had been in the position they were. And the thing about the school board is, because I had such challenges and such difficulty getting an education, I do think that people like me, and more than me, have gone through this, but I do think people who have had very difficult times and who have gone through so much at such a young age, we had very good parents who wish they could have done more in terms of allowing us to go to school more, but that was a living. And for example, I have to tell you, I'm glad the laws have changed, because when I was 11 years old, I was always big for my age. I worked 10 hours in the cotton field, digging weeds and chopping cotton and getting calluses on my hands for 3 hours a day. And when I got to be 15, worked 13 hours a day in the hot Mississippi sun for $5 a day. And thank goodness child labor laws forbid that now, but in those days in that part of the country, it was considered good money. So the reason I think this is important is that I do think that it's not a hollow promise when people can tell you you can be anything you want to be if you work hard enough at it. And the way I got my education was I worked full-time and went to college and got my 2 degrees. And I also got to live a dream that I always wanted to do, and that was see some of the world. And I worked and saved my money and went and traveled around the world. I took a year and a half, and I did that. So in terms of geographically where I came from, socially where I came from, racially where I came from, educationally where I came from, and the distance where I came, and to be able to come and serve on the board, in my opinion, one of the highest-ranked educational boards in the country, because we have traveled around the country and collaborated with other boards, and serve with one of the nation's greatest superintendent, Mrs. Cumbo, serve with 8 or 10, 12 people, who have, some of whom have left. I mean, for an average guy, average intelligence, average means that I had, and to achieve this, and I just thank all the people along the way who helped me. So it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Newly retired Anchorage School Board member Macon Roberts at his final board meeting in late April. Recently, Roberts stopped by KSKA to speak more about his Mississippi Delta childhood in the 1940s and 1950s, as well as some of his perspectives on the Anchorage School District. We begin our conversation by revisiting the Deep South of Robert's youth.
We had a big family, a real close family. And my dad, who only had the chance to go to third grade, my mom went to the ninth grade, which was a good education for black people in ninth grade, taught him how to read and write and do everything else. But our parents were great providers. And because we had the size of a family, we were able to get sharecropping land in volume because we could produce so much. And producing by that, I mean plant, raise, pick so much cotton. But in terms of the message, the big message that you didn't count, you were third class, a lower citizen, it was really evident everywhere. It was apartheid-like. And even with the desks and things you said at school, those were hand-me-down from the white schools. The books were hand-me-down. The system couldn't have been so separate and so opposite. Even in the movie, the blacks were set in the hot roof rafter top of the movie. The whites were set out in the air-conditioned lower, bottom of the movie. The water fountains, white and black. The restrooms, white and black. And they weren't equally kept or equal equality. So every message you got was that you are less than white, you are lower than anyone on the totem pole. Even the immigrants came over. I remember one situation that it was like yesterday, during at the end of the war. We were in Mississippi, and a truckload of Germans came by. Their leader, and as far as I could tell, they only had Germans on there, and it was an officer, POWs, prisoner of war, probably in 46 maybe. But the point about that was this, that stood out in my mind. Here, POWs, unsupervised, okay, and they had the run of the farm, and they could go in places that the blacks couldn't go. They could go, and we were just done fighting them, their enemy, Germany, the enemy. They instantly had more rights, more privileges than blacks who were three or four or five generations of people right there.
The divided culture of the South in those years produced a strong desire in Macon Roberts for schooling and escape.
I was really hungry for education because when you live on the farm, you follow the crops. So when it's time to chop the cotton and get the weeds out, regardless what's going on at school, you have to be there. A lot of times, the only time we got to go was, one, either after we caught up with the grass and the weeds and the cotton, or when the weather got so bad where it rained or something, we went to school. And when I went to school, I just saw it as such a privilege to be there. And I couldn't understand why kids who went every day were goofing around and not studying. Because I knew once the weather got right, I would be back in the field. You know what I mean? I just treasured it so much, having that chance to just be there and soak it in and wishing, this is on Monday. Lord, I sure wish I could be here Wednesday, Thursday. You know? I used to dream about being in the city, being in a place where you could use your mind. And one day I said to my dad, when I get grown, I want to go to New York City. And he said, what do you know about New York City? I mean, he just couldn't comprehend why would I want to leave there to go to New York City. Like, this isn't good enough for your type. He, of course, realized it before he died. Why that? It was like if you want to get your way out of the field, get your way out of the country, get your way out of the village, you got to have something to be able to adapt to where you want to go to. And that's where that education part came in. And with the older siblings, they were factory. They went to the factory. The pattern tended to go straight up from Mississippi, Chicago, all those steel mills. From Louisiana, they would go up to the Missouris. From the east, the Carolinas, they go up to New York, you know, straight up. And the trains were going. They would go straight up. And then they would come back. And if they shook your hands, you wanted to go up north even more because it was very unusual to see a man with non-callous hands. And when you have your hands on those hard hoe handles and somebody shakes your hand and you say, man, I want hands like those. You know what I mean? It was a little thing. The other thing, too, which we thought they were putting on airs, but the way they talk differently. They use correct language. They didn't use the dialect we use. And we would say something like, man, you come on and get in this house. They would say, it's time for you to come into the house now. You know? She would say, I want to be like that when I grow up, you know?
Roberts left Mississippi and attended a community college in Fresno, California. Halfway through his sophomore year, he came to Alaska for summer work. He fell in love with the state, and 2 years later, in 1966, he moved here. He graduated from the University of Alaska Anchorage with a double major in psychology and sociology. After working at McLaughlin Youth Center as a counselor, he took a year and a half off to travel to Europe. There he met his wife, and when they returned to Alaska, Macon Roberts went back to McLaughlin. After several years at the youth center, he became a probation officer for the state. Because of his professional background, Roberts is especially interested in young people who have trouble fitting into the school environment. He feels the school district is making progress helping these students.
I think the school district is working harder to find how to make certain programs more amenable and more stimulating to kids that don't think like your average, bright, motivated student. I think they realize, I know when I first started in the 70s in McLaughlin, it was either this way over here in the good part or that way over there in the bad part, but very little in between. And they start losing so many kids who were bright kids, but they weren't turned on by the regular motivating things that your average kid was turned on by. So they said, we're losing too many. And let's try and bring up, come up with something that, an alternative something. And I think that's why a lot of the alternative programs came into being, like the SAVE program, like the, you know, other program.
One of the toughest tasks Roberts faced during his two terms occurred behind closed doors before the regular school board meeting. It was the executive session, which included deciding whether to suspend or expel students. He often found himself disagreeing with the other board members.
It's very difficult for me to vote to suspend kids for some of the things that they did, which are on the books and in the policy, were against policy that they violated. And that was real hard for me, very hard for me, because I came out of a system where I saw kids who were way out of the box, way out there. And to see some of these kids who were functioning within the system but just stepped over this line, and I don't want to make light of those lines because obviously you have to have a policy to try and keep the controls and keep the lid on and try and keep the disruption and some guidelines to follow because you have so many, you obviously can't let kids do anything. But that bothered me. That bothered me a whole lot. And I had to read and reread the policy and try and scratch the little hair I had left on my head, how we could make some adjustment to make those policy more conducive to those kids who did minimal disruptions and yet they violated the policy, if they could stay within that system. And that was very difficult because I had been to the way other extreme where the kids came in where there were very little hope of rehabilitation or they had gone way out there in order to get there and into that system that had to do that. But yet here are kids who were functioning within the system, but because you had a policy of where they and I don't want to minimize the drug usage, but they had a marijuana cigarette or they had smoked a marijuana cigarette, and acknowledge that they had, so forth. By policy, we had to kind of throw the academic death penalty at them, and that was kind of, especially after the second violation. And I do realize, having worked in those systems as long as I did, that you need to have a certain amount of structure, because if you don't have structure, your system collapses. You obviously have to have that. But the alternative to that is where you have kids with a lot of potential and doing well otherwise, you do need to have them so that they can go through a certain system on their way to becoming productive citizens, even though they may be a little square hole-ish that doesn't fit so well in that round hole, but you need to make some adjustment. I think that was allowed with some of the alternative program. I think when I first started, there was one strike, you out, and then they moved it up to two. And then they got some alternative programs where the kids could work in that and get back in sooner. I still think it could use a little more tweaking. I'm not sure exactly what yet, but I think it could be continued to work better. I had a hard time with the kind of incidental things. Like, for example, one time one kid came back to school to get a cell phone that was taken away, and they said something to the effect to somebody who was with them, well, don't come in here because they might want to search the car type. And, of course, well, guess what they did? And they found something in the car with the person that was riding with the person. And that person who went to get her cell phone was suspended. I had a real hard time with that, and I questioned that vigorously at the meeting. And just those kind of things. I don't want to sound like an overly permissive fella that let anything go, because obviously it doesn't, but I don't want to be like a Keystone Cop where you gotcha. I mean, we're in a business to educate and help the kids with flaws as well as we are with those kids that are, and thank goodness they are in ROTC and Honor Roll Society and everything, but we end up bringing along all of our children. And sometimes I think we have to look at from where those kids started to where they have gone through, what kind of background they have, what kind of homes they come out of, what kind of examples they have had from adults, and take all that under consideration. Because if my kid, who grew up with their welfare mother and their absentee dad, and your kid, who grew up with their college-educated parents, with several figure salary, with all kinds of advantages, okay? And they have had different kind of guidance, different kind of advantages, different kind of upbringing. And you have to see from where somebody come. Your kids, I would expect them to get to the 99th yard line. This other kid, if that kid gets to the 55th yard line, look for where they come. They have come from 20 yards deep into the end zone.
Among the compliments he received from his board colleagues at his final meeting were their acknowledgments of Robert's role in causing a re-examination of district suspension and expelling policies, an examination likely to continue even after his retirement. This last year, the Anchorage School District reached a benchmark that it has been moving steadily toward over the last two decades. Minority groups now comprise 51% of the student body. After 6 years on the school board and becoming very familiar with the district on a multitude of levels, Roberts gave a general appraisal about how well he thinks the school district is doing with its minority student population.
I think the district policies are user-friendly, are set out to be all-inclusive, all students equal, all students are valued, and I really do think a lot of people working in the district believe that. On the other hand, I think a lot of people don't adhere to that. They wouldn't tell you, they don't adhere to it. They wouldn't tell you their biases. They wouldn't tell you they don't value minorities as they do others. But a lot of people deep down don't. To keep their jobs, to make it look like they are progressively minded and they are caring, I don't think that they are sincere about it, and I think they pull the wool over a lot of people's eyes, and I think they do an awful lot of damage in the name of doing the good thing for the district. And it's very frustrating. And it's so disguised and so hidden and it's so coded and it's so sophisticated. And if, in my mind, the effort were put into carrying out the policy to bring up all our kids to the same level that the boat should rise, as opposed to doing covert stuff not to bring all those kids with no voices and no backing or whatever, no beautiful blonde hair and blue eyes. I think it's a travesty. You just don't want to go around playing Keystone Cops and pointing at this person and that person and so forth and so on. But you just know the spirit of the program is not there. And I think it does an awful lot of harm, and I think it's very sad, and that was very frustrating to me.
Roberts will continue to serve on a couple of other local boards, one being the Anchorage Senior Center Board. And he'll continue to volunteer. He says having grown up with so little, he feels he has to give back to the community to help others. And, well, there's still that wanderlust to satisfy.
My wife and I have a trip planned to do something I have wanted to do ever since I've been in Alaska. You know what that is? To go down the Inside Passage. Yes. Later this month, we're going to take a boat trip on the Carnival Cruise Line and be Alaskan tourists. And going to go to, oh, wherever they stop, Juneau, and different places, and disembark, and spend a day there. Going to even spend a day in Whittier, where we catch it. Go in the Prince William Sound down there. And then it'll take us 7 days to get to Vancouver. And that's been one of my long 40-some-odd-year dreams. Oh, you know how you have a to-do list? That's been way at the top of the to-do list.
Former Anchorage School Board member Macon Roberts. Roberts served 6 years on the board. He chose not to seek a third term and retired last month. This has been Closer Look, a special KSKA presentation that offers our listeners a chance to learn more about a topic that has formed the basis for a recent news story or seeks to profile people doing special work in our community. Closer Look is posted on our website, kska.org. This is Len Anderson, thanking you for listening.